You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon from Los Angeles. It's on a Wednesday, 12 noon, on my weekly show on LA Talk Radio, Show Me the Numbers. I'm Yael Kagan. I'm a hypnotherapist. I'm mastering neurolinguistic programming, also known as NLP, and mastering in numerology, both Western and Kabbalic. I'm also the author of the book published almost a year ago, Unlock Your Child's Potential, which is a guide to parenting through numerology. It's available in English, as shown, and also in Hebrew, can be purchased directly through Amazon or through me. And like every week, I bring a guest, and this week I have with me a very known psychologist here in the LA area, and I welcome Liron Samara, my guest today. And we're going to wait a second before we can get her on the screen. She's with us. Here she is. Hi, Liron.
Hi.
Welcome to my show. And before I hand the microphone to her, I do want to tell you so that you know, she's very known here in LA. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist specializing in anger management and relationships. We will touch both of them. She is the owner of a private practice in Woodland Hills, California, called Therapy Ties. She is also very known here in the community. She's one of the founders of Beyachad. Beyachad is a nonprofit organization that helps Israeli families in Los Angeles in time of need. And we will definitely touch that as well. And I do want to hand the microphone to you, Liron, so that you can let the audience know a little bit more about you, where you grew up and study, and give us a little bit so that we know more about you.
So thank you so much for having me. Very exciting.
Pleasure.
Very humbling presentation.
Hey, it's yours.
Very nice. Thank all, you very all much. You. So yes, I'm Liron Samara, happily married, a mother of three beautiful kiddos. Started my journey about 14 years ago, including school, internship. I went to UCLA for my bachelor's, Philippa University for my master's, did my first internship in school. And then a dear colleague of mine kind of sent me this ad about anger management practice that needs an intern. And just found it interesting. So I sent a text, went to an interview, fell absolutely in love with the owner. Still not knowing where I'm heading myself into, right? Still had no idea what anger management was. But as I started the training, I noticed how much of the anger management is part of us Israelis and how much it's part of our culture. And I remember all the aha moments having on the way of like, oh my God, it's not a bad thing. Anger is not only bad. And suddenly looking at that with tools, I had an urge to get to people who felt lost in their anger and felt lost in their feelings and kind of bring the news. Guys, it's not hopeless. It's not all bad. We can figure it out and we can talk about it. And from there, I always had a passion to work with couples. It's something that very interests me, that on one hand, we have something that we can say the most common failing business in the world, marriage, right? And with the years, we're just seeing increase in divorce rates, yet people still getting married, people still like this business, and you cannot stop and wonder what's going on there and why people want it so much. So I started working with couples with my knowledge of anger management. And I think I want to open parenthesis and kind of say about anger management that anger management is the publicized, politically correct term to use for anger management. In reality, in my clinic, anger management is just emotional management. But if we will call it emotional management, no one will feel the crisis to come and work on it. Who wants to talk about emotions, right?
Yes.
So I started working with couples and relationships. And in the last, I want to say few years, I am really drawn into relationships, not only between two people and significant others, but more than ever, relationship with the self. So a lot of the work that I do with my clients, even in couples therapy, is kind of highlighting that the way we see ourselves and the way we love ourselves and the expectations we have from ourselves, that's what we're going to mirror back to the world. And that's pretty much where I'm at now. Love my work. Very passionate about that. You asked me where I grew up. I half grew up in Israel, half grew up here. I'm literally half. I moved here when I was 16. I moved here with my parents. Very challenging teenage time to say goodbye to my friends and start all over again. But, you know, as a believer, I believe everything is right on point. And I got here right on time to finish high school and do college. And I think it's very much my personality today. I'm Israeli and I'm American, and I find both cultures in me. And I think it's a great blessing.
100%. And I think all of us, the Israelis, it doesn't matter which passport you have. We have both, but we always feel, whether it's American Israeli or Israeli American, it's something in our blood, and it's part of our mentality and how we were raised. And it doesn't matter if you were raised with American or Israeli parents here in the U.S., you are still raised as Israeli, this 100%. Way or another. And I do want to dive first into talking about relationship. I'm not even talking just marriages, but relationship, because I see it also in my practice that, I mean, it became a sort of a pandemic. I mean, it's like so popular to get divorced, and it's bringing it to the point that people are afraid to get married, because instead of thinking about the positive about it, they think about, but what if we get divorced, which is a shame, but it's, you know, that's where things are. And that's why I love to discuss it, because I think people need to be more educated, especially from people like you. And I want to ask, like, what are the key factors that contribute to a healthy and lasting relationships? I would say especially in marriages, but not just in marriage, in relationships.
I think first and foremost, like, by far the most important factor is being authentic. And being authentic means I have a good relationship with myself and I have a good communication with myself. Therefore, I can communicate to you what I need, what I want, what I'm scared of, what I love, how do I want to be loved, right? Now, it will never be 100%. I mean, masks are there for a reason, and we do need to protect ourselves. But if I need to say that the majority of your time, you're able to be present as you, and even if you're not present as you, but you are knowledgeable and insightful enough to know where you kind of had a moment that it kind of snuck out, you kind of weren't you at the moment, and you can come back to it and talk about it, I think by far you will have a very high chance of having a beautiful relationship. Because if I'm there as me and you're there as you, then we are not fighting about who's right and who's wrong and how did you say this and how did you say that. We can just communicate and say, hey, Yael, I like when you do this. Can you do that more? Or, you know, I really got hurt from something. So I would say by far the most important thing in my eyes is being authentic and being you. If I need to think about few other factors, is good communication skills. And when I say good communication skills, we need to understand and realize we didn't all grow up in the same households, and our communication skills are different. But understanding your strengths and understanding your deficits would 100% help you. So if I know I don't like confrontations and I work on myself, on how can I communicate myself without feeling intimidated, right? So back, I am aware of my deficits and I don't put it on other people, then I can communicate myself. So if I need to do it through messages, if I need to do it through, I don't know, there are plenty of things, but being accountable for your communication skills. And I think one more, if specifically to intimate relationships, there is something that I see, it's like a phenomenon I see in my practice a lot of times. It's that we are really great with our friends, not as great with our spouses, right? If your girlfriend will call you and tell you that she needs you, you'll be there in no time. Mm-hmm. You will just be there for her and whatever it may mean. When it's our spouses, we allow ourselves not to. When it's our spouses, we allow ourselves to just be short, just be not patient enough. And I feel that, not I feel, I think that if we would treat our spouses as our best friends with all the intention of loving them and being there for them, there is no reason why it's not going to be successful.
I agree 100%. And I think that's one of your strongest message here for everyone. And when I bless people when they get married, for instance, I always say, stay the best friends. Because yes, there 100%. Are other things, but stay best friend. The spouse you chose needs to be your best friend. Because after all, that's, I think, the glue in a relationship. And I liked you mentioned people not being authentic enough. And do you think that there is a lot of contribution to all the social media? Because after all, and it doesn't matter how authentic we will say that we are on social media, most cases people are not authentic. And yes, there was always that honeymoon stage in every relationship, I understand that, but I think it's 10 times stronger now. Do you think it's part of the problem that the beginning of the relationships, the way they start, whether it's, you know, all kind of apps or just regular social media, that's part of the problems?
I don't think it's how it starts that is part of the problem. I think that as a whole, social media and the effect of social media is a problem. What I mean by it is, you know, the constant comparison on this couple and that couple, and oh, they go on vacations and they have money and they buy brands and they go on restaurants and look, he bought her a gift and you didn't, right? So this whole social media paradigm where this is not authentic and that's not reality, and I'm comparing my relationship to something that it's unachievable, it's not real, it's an enigma, it's you know what I mean? So that's the problem. And the social media in general, there is a constant feeling of lack. I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not rich enough. I don't have enough friends. I don't have enough followers. There is always not enough, but you will never have enough because who are you comparing yourself to, right? When we grew up, all I knew is that my friend, you know, she was married. I was married. I mean, back then when people got married, you knew what people told you. You knew what people exposed you to, right?
Right.
And now, for good and bad, people are being exposed to things that it's an overload. So also, social media and anxiety nowadays. Look at the anxiety rates that it's just...
And depression also.
Right, right, right. And again, the anxiety, the fear, you talked before about feeling scared of getting married. There's also a big FOMO, a fear of missing out. I mean, you see all those single people on Instagram. You have a fear to commit yourself to one. I mean, how do I know she's the right one? How do I know this is the right one when I feel as though the world has so much to offer me, right? So yeah. I'm not going to settle in. So I don't think it's how it starts. I think social media in general is a problem. that we hold it as the truth.
Right.
When we all know it's everything but the truth.
Right. And you mentioned at the beginning also, I got, you know, it was exactly how I see things, is that the relationship with ourselves. So self-love. Before you can love someone else, you need to learn to love yourself. And who am I? What is my personality? Before, we used to ask, who is your role model? Who are you trying to look like? What is your model for relationship? It used to be your parents, maybe your grandparents. People are now, I even hear them comparing themselves to people on social media or TV. When again, this is not reality. You cannot try to be someone like someone who doesn't really exist. This is not true. And I think people are lost a little bit. And if you are not certain with who you are and who you want to be and what is the relationship you are looking for, how does that really affect, you know, first of all, the people that we are attracting to, the relationships that we are looking to attract to, and then managing that relationship?
Right. And you're touching something very important. There is a big difference between what I want and what I need. Right.
Right.
So people say, I mean, I'm sure you experience it. They come to your practice and they tell you how much they want someone loving and caring and this and that. And then when they find someone loving and caring, they're like, no, they're too boring. That's not for me. Right. But wait, is that what you want or is that what you need? Right. Are you trying to be Instagrammable, or are you trying to really create a relationship that is long lasting?
100%. And that's part of our problem, I think. And it's taking me back 100%. to self-love, but I do want to go back into communication, not only because one of my passions is obviously also NLP, and we communication can be taught, but I do want to ask you how crucial, I kind of like know the answer, but how crucial is communication in maintaining a strong marriage, and what techniques do you suggest for couples struggling with communication breakdowns?
It's very crucial. If I cannot communicate my needs, how my spouse can be there for me. No, I don't come with a guide of what is how to make me happy. And I'm sorry, no one needs to make you happy. You, the only one who needs to make yourself happy, you're the only one who needs, you know, to make yourself happy. But what I'm trying to say, if I don't have directions of what my husband needs and what hurts and what he loves, how would I know? So communication is very, very crucial, very crucial. But within communication, there is such a variety of how we can communicate. So a few keys is it, and we're going to touch on anger management later, but few keys is when you're overly emotional, that's not a time for a deep, important conversation, right? So all of us grew up with the saying that when we are angry, we don't think, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just a saying. It's not just saying physiologically. When you are emotional, when you are angry, you don't think because you're in a survival mode. And in a survival mode, your brain doesn't want you to think. Your brain wants you to be instinctive. Your brain wants you to survive.
Right.
So if I'm very angry or frustrated or upset at the moment, I cannot come to my husband and have a conversation because there will never be a conversation. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's number one. Number two is do not argue in the car. Do not argue in your bedroom.
Text
messages, I wouldn't argue, but you know, it's far-fetched that people won't. It's such a common way of communicating. What I would do is write a message, don't send it, wait 10 minutes. If you still like the message after 10 minutes, then send it. But really work on the muscle of patience and a muscle of letting yourself kind of reflect before you respond. And we call it responding instead of reacting, right? So it's not a knee-jerk reaction. I take a moment. Another thing is, you know, if your husband or your spouse or your wife sent you that message, would you like it? Would you feel respected and loved? remember the best friend? Would you send this message to your best friend?
Mm-hmm.
The last one that I'll give is, whenever you have a problem, remember you are the one who has a problem, right? So I want to tell Yael, don't yell at me. I don't like to be yelled at, right? A lot of people feel like, oh my, she yells at me. She does not to yell at me. I'm not going to allow it. Right. But it's your problem when people yell at you. You don't like it.
Right.
Right. So this whole concept of understanding what I don't like, what I don't want, but more important, what I do want, how do I want, and speaking from an I perspective, I don't like to be yelled at. If you want to have a conversation with me, please lower your voice. Okay. I think communication, it's such a big, I don't need to tell you that. It's such a big umbrella.
Right.
But the more you have open communication with yourself, the better you're going to be able to communicate outside of you.
I think
one of the biggest problems is that sometimes we don't even understand why we feel what we feel, and we expect other people to understand us.
Right. And it's interesting, by the way, you were talking about loudness. Israelis are loud. And many times people mm-hmm. say, why is he screaming at me? Or why is he? And we just talk this way, but it's mm-hmm. needed to be understood. But it's in communication. I want to include, it's not just what we say, is I at least see people that are not listening. And if you are working with your spouse or whatever couple and someone is telling you, but you are always pushing me to a corner and you keep saying, why is he saying I'm pushing him to a corner, or you are ignoring it completely? I mean, don't you think that that's something that needs to be learned? It's not just what we say, is also learning to listen to the other without judging it.
Yes, yes. And I think you're touching on another subject in communication, which is boundaries,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you right now speaking in an intensity that is too much for me, and I'm not able to listen to you, but I don't feel comfortable telling you, hey, Al, that is too intense, then I'll check out. Okay. If you have a complaining conversation with me every day, you're exhausting the system.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check out. Okay. So the responsibility of the listener is to say, hey, I'm not capable of having this conversation today. For instance, my husband knows if I had a day full of clients, when I come home, even if I really, really want to, I'm not able to have deep conversations. My brain is like a sponge. All I want is to, you know, decompose, have my time to myself. He can be with me, can be next to me, but there is no expectation of having important conversations. And there is no expectation because I place the boundary there saying, hey, I love you. I care about our conversations. Please, when I come back from a long day, that's not the right time. Right? So yes, it is also about listening. But it's also about boundaries and understanding your limitations.
Mm-hmm. Got you. I agree 100%. And I want to dive a little bit. I mean, we can talk about relationships forever. And I think in almost mm-hmm. every show I bring it up because it's very interesting. I actually want to ask you that when you work with couples, I mean, in many times, at least I see that couples are coming, bringing, you know, a situation, and they are almost expecting you to be the judge, to say mm-hmm. you are right or she's right. And you see, but she said I was right. She took my side, which obviously we are not supposed to be there. And that's our biggest challenge. But how is it different? What do you do that you can contribute? So if people are looking for, you know, couple therapy or something, what can you contribute? What is different that you see and that will have more success in relationships therapy?
I think one of the first things I do in my earlier sessions is, first of all, saying that I'm the therapist of the relationship, not the couple,
mm-hmm.
meaning not the individuals, right? My patient is your relationship. And first, right from the beginning, we speak about there is no right or wrong. There is just how I see things and how you see things and how realities can coexist, how I can still love you and be mad at you, how I can say something nasty, but also mean well, you know. And one of the things I do in couples therapy is I work with the couple individually on understanding their relationship with themselves. Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, the first session, I always have a mutual couple session when both people are there. And then most likely I would have either both of them in the room, but I would concentrate on one. And I just ask questions that you don't usually ask at home, right? So how did you learn about anger? And how did you find out about love? And do you know your love language? And do you know what is like the most important needs list for you? So what are the things that you have to have in your relationship? Have you ever thought about your love language? Do you know how you like to be loved? And do you know how to love others? How you love others, meaning, right? And from there, just showing the different angles of how people see things, I think we work on this empathy muscle. And how, do you remember that you used to really love this person? Yeah, there is something that is very common that I see in couples. I don't know if you see it too, is that one of the first questions I ask is, what did you fall in love with? Mm-hmm. You know? And almost every time, the characteristics that they fell in love with
is what they don't the like. Characteristic, now.
The characteristic they want to divorce.
Right.
And you're like, wow. So she was ambitious and bubbly and energetic. And now she's aggressive and just attention seeker. How did you move from here to here? So I think part of the work is really taking them through the journey of empathy and seeing that realities can coexist and there is no right or wrong. I can believe what I believe and you believe what you believe, and together we're gonna kind of create a belief system for our household.
Right. And also what I always tell them is, don't try to be right, be smart. Because if you try to be right, everybody has their own direction, their own vision. You put different glasses and you see it in different eyes. So 100%. It's very important. And I do want to dive a little bit, if possible, into anger, because it's, you know, in the Israeli community, but it's everywhere now. People are more angry. People are very passionate about what is happening. The social media just help that. Obviously, it escalates from there even more. But like, what are some early signs that anger might be becoming a problem in a relationship? And how can couples address these issues before they escalate?
What are the early signs that anger might be a problem? You mean that it might be violent? Is that a question?
I mean, anger doesn't have to become violent, but even emotional, you know, I would call it violent, is something that we are seeing now every day.
I think a big a red line should be if I feel intimidated or scared to be me, or if I do things that I really don't want to do, but I do it just to prevent a confrontation or an argument. That's a big red light. Mm-hmm. That would be the two biggest where I don't feel safe.
Okay.
And I don't feel safe doesn't mean I'm going to die tomorrow. Don't feel safe meaning I'm not able to exist. I'm not able to be next to this person and be myself.
Right. Exactly. Not being myself. That's probably what I was trying to hear, because it doesn't have to be physical. It's
No. I was trying to understand the question, because there is a difference between anger and rage. Aggression and rage, if I need to be specific, and those, and that's a very different kind of rage, is something that we don't deal with in my private practice.
Right. But like when I was asking might becoming a problem in the relationship, and when it's a problem is basically when you find yourself, like you said, I'm choosing not to be me just because I'm afraid of his reaction or her reaction.
100%. I don't bring up conversations. I don't hang out with certain friends because I don't want to have to explain myself. I avoid situations. I literally start to shut down myself.
Right. And it can even be silent treatment. I mean, it doesn't have to be even without hearing it. Silent treatment probably is even 10 times harder than an actual anger, whether it's physical or verbal.
So anger, if I may just take a minute just to explain the difference. Anger is the feeling. There is nothing wrong with anger. Anger is not something you see. Anger, it's something that you feel. So anger, sadness, guilt, happiness are all the same in terms of emotions, mm-hmm. right? The problem is with aggression. And what you mean is when the feeling is start being expressed as a behavior. Mm-hmm. So now I can see that you're angry because you're yelling, because you're screaming, because you're breaking things, because you're cussing, because you do things that are aggressive in nature. Mm-hmm. Now, we can express anger in four different communications styles. And we have the aggression that is very obvious, someone that is obviously behaviorally angry, right? And we have the passive person who just take it all in, pretends like nothing happens, just let things slide, just doesn't want to deal with things. So they pretty much consume their own feelings, and you don't know when something is wrong. Statistically, at some point in their marriage, one day they get up and they're just out. Mm-hmm. And when they're out, there is no way to bring them in. So they might be quiet for 20 years, 15 years, and then one day say, I'm out, I want a divorce. And you had no idea something was bad, mm-hmm. right? And you have the passive aggressive, and we all love it, especially in LA. Everyone, I want to explain, because a lot of people don't understand about that. I mean, they use passive aggressive loosely, like slang, but passive aggressive, it means that your body language, your action, and your words don't match. So if you ask me how I'm doing, and I say I'm fine, you're like, you don't look fine. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm just fine. Right? And you have the assertive, and that's what we all hope to be, assertive. So the aggression is what you're talking about, and the silent treatment is part of the aggressive punishment of I won't talk to you.
Exactly. And taking anger and looking at the behavior pattern around it, how much of it do you believe is just coming from home, from what I know, from what my subconscious mind knows? That's what I know, that's how my dad, my mom behaved, and I just do the same, not because I agree with it, I didn't like it as a child, however, that's what I know, and if my parents did it, then I assume it's the right way to do it.
I think anger as a whole is a learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And everything we learn, we can relearn. And I don't even, a lot of my clients, and the reason why I love working with anger management is because how much ignorance and lack of education around anger we have, is that once you understand that anger is, it just comes to protect you, mm-hmm. and you have an amygdala, which is kind of an almond-shaped part of your brain that is responsible to tell you when you're in danger. And your amygdala is very sensitive, and it keeps lighting up like, mm-hmm. danger, danger. It's because you kind of taught your brain that almost everything is dangerous. Once I teach you that, you don't need anger as much, right? You learn how to deal with behavior, with primary emotions like sadness, disappointment, shame, right? And then we don't have to be aggressive. But one of the questions I ask when I start working with people is, how do you see anger at home? It's one of my first questions. How did you know people were angry at you, right? Mm-hmm. So was it people yelling? You got a punishment? Did you get spanked? Did you have the silent treatment, as you said? Did you just feel something was wrong when you were asked? You got like, no, everything is fine. So you always like tense kind of environment, right? So I feel anger is very much a learned behavior, which is very hopeful because everything we learn, we can relearn.
100% if we're aware of that.
Right. And usually people come to therapy most of the time when their environment let them know that they're not going to take it anymore. So they lost their job, lost their relationship. They're being threatened by divorce. The kids said something that really punched them harsh. There is some kind of a consequence where the environment won't take it anymore.
Got
so
you.
That's how they're, you know, getting aware that it's crossing the line.
Right. And can you share like one or two tips that you give your clients, whether it's about relationship or not, but how to deal with anger management? I mean, with everything you said, I kind of like understood what it is, like the process. But if you can share one or two tools, that will be great.
So one tool is I love to use the a scale of anger, where 1 to 10, right? Where 10 is by far, I lost my mind. I did something that I don't usually do, right? So a behavior, an act of anger, an act of aggression. Now, I'm not saying it could be aggression. It could be passive. It could be however you express anger, but something that doesn't happen frequently. You write it as your 10, okay? Mm-hmm. And then your number one, you write how you are on a content, happy day. You look at yourself behaviorally, physiologically, how your body feels, how your thought feels. What do you hear yourself say to yourself? And then we go to number five. So what's your number five? Number five, if I need to, when I explain it to my clients, it's still very easy to walk away from that anger. It's still kind of, if you're going to make me laugh, it's going to be a non-issue. It's an agitation. It's like annoyance. It's not anger. Mm-hmm. The most important number I want people to know as my tip is number seven. Mm-hmm. Because in number seven, what happens, while in number five, it's really easy to walk away. Number seven, the amygdala lights up, tells the body that we are in danger. We have cortisol and adrenaline being dumped in our body. And once this process starts, there is no reversing to it. You can't tell your brain, just kidding, my wife is just annoying. You can't tell your brain, just kidding, just a stupid driver driving in front of me. Once this process starts, now you need time for those endorphins to be broken in your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. Okay? So my first tip is learn your signs, your body signs at numbers 5 and 6. So if, for example, I get very sarcastic at number 5, my number 5 is I get sarcastic, meaning I can get funny and then a moment later I'm angry, right? But when I know it and when I'm at the zone of being sarcastic for way too long, I'm like, okay, I should take myself out of the situation and be back because it's no problem. I got up, I walked away, I'm back. There is still no immediate consequences on my body at this point.
You're still in control.
Exactly. My second tip is, should you get to number 7, now you feel your body. And what do I mean by feel your body? So the adrenaline and cortisol has been released in your body. Some people feel it, a pressure in their head. Some people lock their jaws. Some people feel dry in their mouth. Some people clench their fist. Some people feel their heart racing. Some people feel sweaty. Right, so whatever you may feel, that's your body signaling to you that the adrenaline and cortisol are there to help you fight or flight. Mm-hmm. I want you to flight. I want you at that moment to get up and detach yourself from the situation. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is that nothing beneficial will happen from that point on. Okay. Your brain is not there. Your brain is shut down. Your brain now is working on survival mode. Your brain doesn't know to differentiate between someone chasing you with a knife or your wife just being annoying in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. There is no difference. And my third tip to you is, again, it's very, I'm trying to summarize it to something you can take with you. Anger is a secondary emotion, meaning it only comes after an emotion flood you and you felt like you needed protection. Okay. When you have moments when you realize you got angry and upset, sit down with yourself, write about the situation, write about what happened, and try to understand if you're not allowed to use anger and all anger affiliated words, such as upset, fume, mad, frustrated, agitated, and so forth. And you need to think about primary emotions such as sadness, shame, disappointment, hurt, guilt. How would you describe the situation? Try to look what feeling, primary feeling, you're avoiding constantly when you get angry. If you do that, you're good to go.
Wonderful. Great, great, great tools. I love metaphorically, by the way, to tell my clients, and I'm not sure why it works, but it does. Think about yourself climbing on a tree. When you climb and you look down and you can still jump and not get hurt, you are fine. That's where you need to back up. If you climb more mm-hmm. than that and you can't come down without any danger, then you climbed a little bit too high. So like try right. to stay in control. And from some reason, it works for people. So whatever works, I love. But I love all your tools. And I do want to jump because I definitely want you to talk about your other hat that you are wearing, which is talk about Beyachad. Mm-hmm. It's a nonprofit organization, and I do want you to talk a little bit about it because it's a very important thing.
Yes. So 4 years ago, at the beginning of COVID, I literally lost my maternal grandmother, and not even a month. I want to say 3 weeks before COVID, she was a Holocaust survivor. And I was the first grandchild. She, I'm sorry, used to tell stories about the Holocaust too. She used to come to my class and lecture and tell my friends about the Holocaust on every Holocaust Remembrance Day. And when the COVID started, there was a picture that kind of, there was a picture on Instagram, and the picture was an older woman stands in front of empty shelves. And there was subtitles that said, all the young people bought everything older people need, something to that realm. And it hit me hard. It really hit home. So at that moment, I texted Rabbi of Chabad of Northridge, and I texted him if he knows of any elder who needs help in the community to go grocery shopping or needs meds or whatever they need, I'm here to help. And I did it with a few other Chabads, and it basically was my sister and I, my little sister and I kind of started it, and then another friend kind of jumped in, and we just started getting a lot of messages. And you know, I'm a therapist. In that day, I had a 5-month-old, and it got very overwhelming. So my little sister said, Liron, how about you open a Facebook page and see if other people want to help too? And she created this beautiful form, and we opened this Facebook page, and we started. Not many days later, I saw that there was another group that was fully in Hebrew. So I reached out to the guy, and his name is Shai Bensby. And I texted him and I said, hey, it seems like we're doing the same thing. How about we do the same thing together? And right away he said, of course, like fully in. And Yael, we worked together and we brought up Beyachad for 8 months without seeing each other. Not wow. even once. Everything was like, we were so busy with COVID and we were so busy with just trying to get the help out there that everything was just through, you know, phone calls and messages. And One important thing to know about our organization and how it differentiates from other organizations. First of all, it's just Shai and I. We don't have a board. We don't have admins. It's just Shai and I. But the true people who work in our organization is our community.
Volunteers?
And it's a community. Yes. And it's a community-based organization. What does it mean? It means that very infrequently we give money to people. It's the one thing we don't do. But if you tell me you need a Friday dinner or holiday dinner, then I reach out to the community. Who is willing to cook for Yael for Friday dinner? If you tell me your son doesn't have a lot of friends to have a birthday, we put it in our Facebook page, and the community helps the mom with the birthday. The community will come to the birthday. The community will, you know, do things. So it's a community based, run by our community. We have about, last time I saw, 1,800 volunteers.
Wow.
It's very much an organization that is run by the community. We help with Friday dinner and holiday dinner and help for families who need groceries and elders, lonely elders in the community, and so on and so forth. But the main thing is, whatever problem you have, you give us a call, and it's like kind of, we are there when you have the problem. You have the problem, we'll try to figure out how to help you. We're not there to give money, but other than that, we do our best to involve our community. And it's been running for almost 5 years.
Wow. I mean, I see it all the time on Facebook and WhatsApp, and yeah. Truly admire. I mean, really.
Thank you.
It's wonderful.
I'm so proud of our community. You know, I think the Israeli community is just beyond words when help is needed.
100%. And we saw it also after October 7 and about, I mean, all the time, I have to say, the community knows how to come together.
100%. We had a quick story of an 80-year-old that the mom called us and said that he did not have friends to have his birthday. And we put it in our WhatsApp group, and Yale, their street at their house was packed.
Wow.
People send their bouncers, and restaurants sent food without us asking. So we had Tel Aviv sent food, and we had Waladin sent food, and Brahmis sent food, and none of us called them. They just heard about it and sent food. And we had Karine from Catchball send Mickey Mouse costume, like a person in a Mickey Mouse costume. The amount of gifts this child have, like, received, and the amount of friends he made that day, it was just like, Shai and I stood from the side, like, tearing up.
Amazing. Bemet, kol hakavod, really. I have to say
Thank you.
And I do want, we have like 2 more minutes, so I do want people to know, first of all, about Beyachad. Let's wrap it up. If people needs you, or if people want to help and give and help with meals or whatever it is, how can they get in touch with you?
So we have a Facebook page that is called Beyachad.
Mm-hmm.
And they can always reach out to Shai or I. We're both on Facebook. We have a WhatsApp group. If you want to join, always reach out to us. We would love to add you.
Okay, wonderful. So Beyachad is spelled Beyahad. So you can find their Facebook page. And how can people who needs therapy, family therapy, anger, whatever, and anything else you specialize in, how can they get in touch with you?
So my website is therapyties.com, and it's on the spin-off of Family Ties. And they can always reach me on my phone number. And I'm not sure, should I?
You can.
Yeah.
If you feel comfortable.
My phone number is 818-208-0518.
Wonderful.
And my email address is liron@therapyties.com.
Okay, perfect. And I do want to say that this was a live stream. Now we did have listeners, but for those who want to watch the recording, it will be on LA Talk Radio a Facebook page, on their website as well, and I'm sharing it on my page as well, and Liron will probably share it. So if yes. you have any questions, you can go directly to Liron or through me, anything that, you know, including you, Liron, if people want to watch the recording, you can either see it on the Facebook page or just download it from the LA Talk Radio website. It will be probably available on their website tomorrow. And it's time to thank you. I mean, it was, thank you for coming as a guest. Thank you for being here. You educated me. It was amazing. And I thank you for that. And hopeful to see you here again sometime for mm-hmm. sure.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. And of course.
Thank you so much.
All right.
You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.